This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 671, brought to you by Eero. Life is too short for bad Wi-Fi. For $100 off the Eero base unit, two beacons, and 1 year of Eero Plus, visit Eero.com/iFanboy and enter promo code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 671. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and joining me, as always, Josh Flanagan.
What's up?
Not always, mostly.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
it's kind of pointless. Occasionally, you're allowed to take some time off. You're, sure. You're not a slave to the machine.
Well.
We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and some weeks are better than others. And then the person deemed the pick of the week person. I'm wildly off script.
Go fight through it.
It's like we haven't done this for 19 years. The person who has that honor picks their favorite book called we called it the pick of the week. Talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron picks, and listener mail if we have time. But we've been going long lately. But whatever, who cares? We do.
I do care. I've got stuff to do.
It takes longer to do post-production, people. Everyone who says it doesn't matter how long the show is, it does matter.
And also, I do this in the middle of my work day.
The show doesn't appear as if from magic.
It's true.
So, anyway, despite the grumbling that you just heard, it's fun. We have a good time. It's our favorite time of the week.
The fact that we go along is because we're like, this is fun, let's keep going. And then afterwards, like, ah, crap.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler warning. There's some spoilers this week, so it's the review show. Be careful. Plug your ears. Turn the iPad off. Do people listen on iPads? I guess they could.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I almost said iPod.
Well, I'm sure there's somebody out there. I guarantee you that amongst our listenership, there's a person who's like, smartphones are dumb. I'm still using my third-gen iPod. It works fine. I guarantee it.
This week, Josh Flanagan had to pick.
Yes, unfortunately, that was the case. I'm not going to tell you that it was an exciting week of comics because
it wasn't bad. Was exciting.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, yeah, can I talk about this again or this one? But if you're listening, then that means you probably saw what the pick was. And the pick for this week is Dynamite's The Lone Ranger number 5, which I'll just preface this before everything else we just heard was shit-canned with this issue. So it was an ongoing and now it's a 5-issue mini that's done.
Yeah, that was disappointing to find out right before the show. You know, as we said before, we don't read the news, and so we were looking up something and stumbled across an article saying that the series had been truncated to 5, and it kind of felt like a final issue, if I'm being honest, now that I look back on it.
Yes, it did, and I don't know if that was planned. I mean, it definitely was the end of an arc, for sure. You know, I think that what we've got here is Mark too smart for his own good Russell.
Yeah, and it's a bummer because we've talked about almost every issue, I think, or maybe every issue of the series. I really love this 5-issue run. I love the Lone Ranger and Tonto, and I think Mark Russell's brought a really fun vibe to the book. And as we discussed, without it being too Mark Russell-y.
Yep.
And I don't sigh because of him. I sigh because we're running out of things to say. But this is one of the books where it's a Lone Ranger book first, and then there's Mark Russell commentary second. And I really enjoyed his take on the Lone Ranger and Tonto's relationship, and it's not obviously a realistic version of the Wild West, but it's a fun version of the Wild West.
I do think that there's a real problem, I think, trying to sell this property at this time to this audience. Even I was like, I don't know if I want to read a Lone Ranger book, partially because I've read a lot of Lone Ranger books and most of them haven't really stuck with me. So if you're, you know, Dynamite's thing and IDW's thing and whoever's to sort of take these properties and sell them largely based on that recognition. And it might be that this property is a little long in the tooth.
Well, I give them credit, though, for putting a guy like Russell on because this is the fifth volume, I think, that Dynamite's done of Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
And they didn't have to, you know, put a writer like him on there.
They probably would have sold about the same amount. Although we wouldn't have been talking about it if they just, you know, got some dude.
Right. So to be fair, the previous volume to this one, which debuted in 2012, which was written by Andy Parks, mm-hmm. I believe we talked about it maybe.
Oh yeah.
With 25 issues.
Oh wow! Really? I'm guessing the margins are thinner now than they were 7 years ago.
And 2006, the 2006 volume. I'm just looking all this up now as we talk, which was Brett Matthews and Sergio Cariello. We definitely talked about that book. Yep. That one also went 25 issues.
Hmm.
So what I'm saying is Mark Russell got shortchanged because the previous two volumes got to go 2 years.
Yeah. So well, that's it is a different world in comics for that in that way. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, end of the day, though, the market is what it is and the economics and there's all sorts of stuff involved with that we kind of understand but don't fully. But the real thing is that we had 5 issues of this, which was a very good story. You know, you're going to be able to pick up his trade. If you like Mark Russell, this is great for you. If you like Lone Ranger or Western Comics, this is going to be great for you. If you like Bob Q, who is a superhuman artist who does 2 books at the same time and colors and inks all of them, then he's there for you too.
You think it'd be more minimalist, but he really doesn't shortchange you in the background and in the world building.
Maybe that's why they canceled it. Maybe it killed him.
He was just falling apart.
Yeah.
His doctor said, you have to stop drawing.
One book, please. No, I must bring Adventures of the West to young minds. I think that for me, what really worked with this was the sensibility in two ways. Is one, there is a real likable affability, which is redundant, those are the same words, to the Lone Ranger.
Yeah.
In this, there's definitely sort of a, I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm kind of having fun, and I'm kind of confident about it, and I'm a little over my head, but I think we're going to be okay. I don't, there's probably an actor who you could associate with that really well. And
we used to talk about the spirit, Darwin Cook's The Spirit was like that, and we used to say that he was sort of the George Clooney of superheroes.
Yeah, I was thinking of that, but I don't think that this Lone Ranger is necessarily George Clooney, but it's a thing like that, sort of.
Yeah.
I think the characterization of that of him was really pretty good. And then also how he interacts with Tonto, and even saying Tonto feels wrong to me. That's where we're at. I'm like, okay, no, that's his actual name because it's been used as sort of a shorthand for Native Americans for such a long time. But there is a line that you're walking there with those characters, and I think that Russell walked it really well. And he brought a reality and a grounding to Tonto that maybe Johnny Depp didn't necessarily.
Although it's a very similar dynamic to the film in which Tonto's the more badass, competent one. And the Lone Ranger's kind of goofy, but he still can get it done at the end of the day. It's a similar dynamic.
And then on the other side, you have literally cartoonish mustache twisting villains. And then at the end, you introduce this sort of Garth Ennis-like villain, which I think that's what put it over the top for me.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that, you know, like there's a little just bit in here where The deal was, if you don't pay this guy, he comes back and gets you, and you know, because he's just super awful, and it literally is a character out of Preacher. I mean, not literally, but as closest to that as possible. If this he's the hitman
that was hired by the ranchers to kill Lone Ranger yep. Tonto, and he's a cannibal. We talked about him in the last issue.
Yeah,
a cannibal who was a kid in the Civil War prison camps, and he's so badass that everyone's afraid of him. And if you don't pay his contract, then he comes back and kills you. Like, that's, you have to only hire him if you can afford him. And of course, at the end of the last issue, when they went to go pay him, the gold was missing from the safe that they had put aside to pay him. And then it was, you know, what happened? The Lone Ranger Tonto were thought dead. And so where'd the gold go? And now they're in trouble because this guy's going to kill him. And everything goes to hell in this issue.
So we come back. First page is they had just found out at the very end of the last issue that the money's gone. So this takes up that exact next moment. There must be a mistake. And then so the bad guy, I'm going to call it Connor.
It's Connor, yeah.
Two N's though, which apparently everyone thinks is your name too. You know, says, no, it's fine. You got 3 days. And then, like, they wake up the next day and the sort of henchman is missing his foot. And then the best part about that is that he's in every page of the book after that looking sad with one foot. It's very like Sopranos-y.
Yeah.
You know, like the poor me. And also kind of like, he's a bad guy. He's got an eye patch. You know, he's,
you know, they didn't even let him rest. Like,
nope.
Oh, you got your foot removed in the middle of the night after you got doped with laudanum. Like, you got to stand here and guard the meeting with one foot.
Come along, not late.
That's hard.
Yep.
I do that in yoga class. That's not easy when I have 2 feet I can fall back on.
Yeah, and also we're in the 1800s here, so right. There is an issue there. You know, and like the solution isn't a big gunfight, at least not between the heroes and the villains. The villains fight with each other, and Tonto's like, if your enemies are going to fight each other, let them. You know, and then there's sort of an economic solution to it. And, you know, basically at every chance that you expected a zig, Russell threw in a little bit of a zag instead to keep it interesting the whole way through, but have it all fit together.
Yeah, we find out how the Lone Ranger Tonto outsmarted everybody, because yep. It sort of happened in the last issue in the background. So here he reveals the magician's secrets, and then they win. And there's a Gatling gun.
I thought it was nice that the lady made fried chicken for the evil man before she left, but then he was mad that there were no drumsticks, which is a callback to the first issue when he wanted the drumsticks.
I think it's sort of sad, like, oh.
He doesn't even get that. He doesn't deserve it.
No, he doesn't deserve it. The man does not deserve a drumstick.
And then you know it's over because they literally rode off into the sunset on the last page.
And it's at the end. I just assumed it was the end of the arc, but yep. I guess whatever.
It's such a bummer. And we've talked about this a lot. We've talked about Mark Russell a lot. We've talked about Bob Q a lot. But really, like, I read a bunch of books and they were fine. I didn't read, like, I read a couple of bad books, but, you know, but there just wasn't something to make the pick of the week. And I got down to the Lone Ranger was the last book I had. And I was like, this will be funny if, like, this is the best book. And it was clearly, you know, 5 pages into it, I was like, oh, this is the best book I've read this week. It was, there was not a chance. And then, of course, the next day you see it's canceled, which is so me.
I mean, the news wasn't announced the next day. We just saw the news.
Yeah.
Clarify for everybody. We were looking before the show, and yeah, so it's a bummer. It's, of course. So this is the second issue three with issue four. Last issue was also the pick of the week. So it was a good book. It's a really good book.
It was, and I'm sorry there won't be more of it, but, you know, the other side is, if you've heard us talk, I mean, most of the time, if we talk about a book this often and this is really something that's good or something that we really like, and if you've been listening to us for this long and you like the kinds of things we do, then you go pick this trade up, man. Maybe the trade sells. They commission another miniseries at some point. Because, you know, the thing is, like, here it's I was going to say it's like a setup, but it kind of wasn't. They just kind of threw us into it. But a lot of times, if you know, the creative team gets a chance to stretch out in later arcs because they don't have to do the heavy lifting so much. And I was looking forward to that part.
Bob Q, I'm really curious. I mean, I know he's doing the James Bond book, but I'm really curious to see what he does next. He's terrific. I wonder if he's under contract to Dynamite because James Bond is also Dynamite, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I'm curious to see where his name shows up, because he's really good. He has a really fun, energetic style. It's a little on the cartoony side, which I like a lot, but he does big action really well, dynamic stuff really well. We've talked about that before.
He does the colors. The colors are good.
It's
Wait, am I right? Yeah, no, I am right. It's the other guy's doing the letters, so yeah.
Yeah, he does it all with 1 foot. I don't know if he is. I assume he has 2 feet.
I was going to assume he had one. I always assume everyone has 1 foot. I don't want to.
This is great. This is a really fun five-issue story. If you like Lone Ranger, if you like Westerns, if you like Mark Russell, if you like good comics, it's well worth it. I love this miniseries.
Yep. And I actually fell off it right after the first one because I missed it, and then I'm glad I got back in.
Well, if you fall off the horse, Josh, you have to get back on it. Jessica Jones, Purple Daughter, number 2. I'm very confused. We talked about this is the third time this book's been talked about in the show. Did we talk about it in the past tense before?
You and I talked about it not on the week that it came out, and we may not have even been on the show.
Well, Ryan talked about it previously when you were on the show.
When I wasn't
so
here.
I guess the second time was you talking about it, having read it previously.
Yes.
That makes sense.
So this is the second digital release, digital original, Jessica Jones, Purple Daughter. This contains chapters 3 and 4. The first issue contained chapters 1 and 2. It's written by Kelly Thompson, whose dialogue I was vicious about not too long ago on the show. I sort of picked this up because I love Jessica Jones and the Purple Man as a story, and it should be played out by now, but it's not. I really enjoyed that first issue a lot, and it really, because basically the idea that and I know Ryan talked about this, so I will very quickly recap. Jessica Jones and Luke Cage became an item in the events of the first Alias series, and they went on to get married and had a child. Who has been a toddler for well over a decade. In this story, she has turned purple.
Right.
And she looks exactly the same.
Wasn't that the cliffhanger at the end of the Jessica Jones last miniseries or series, was that the kid was purple at the end?
It might have been. I don't remember where it starts. I think that might have been the case. But, you know, basically the first chapter started off with she's purple and her and Luke are trying to deal with it. And what it does is this great, you know, in story terms, this is not a big action story, but all of this doubt is now cast, because that's what the Purple Man does, is that you can't trust anything. You can't trust your feelings. You can't trust your memories. You can't trust the person you love the most. And Luke Cage has been super, super understanding about everything. And this was the thing that sort of broke him a little bit, because he's like, well, what if my daughter's not mine? What's going on? Maybe it's not even really happening. Just nothing is even close to certain. And this I think it's in this issue that there's actually, she is putting the kid to bed. Luke and the daughter moved out, basically, because he didn't trust Jessica, not because he didn't want to, but he just couldn't know, and he had to protect his daughter. She visits and puts the girl to bed, and then she comes out and she overhears Iron Fist and Power Man talking. It's a really nice scene where he's sort of laying it all out there. He's like, I feel bad, and I don't want to do that. I don't know what to do. But in the end, he goes, you know, at the end, this is my family. I'm going to stick with them no matter what. It was a really good set of dialogue and writing and a character moment that I really appreciated. And everybody did have their distinctive voices. And I think that Thompson has a really good handle on Jessica Jones in this comic book version. And also the original comic book version was sort of one way, and she's come a long way since then in terms of character development. She was a drunken, lonely person. She's still a drunkard, but she's not quite as lonely now. But it feels like
she's got a family. She's got
It feels like a continuation of that. This feels like the correct character. And I was gonna say not the TV show, but the TV show actually got it pretty close too. And you know, it's a really compelling story. And then so there's something going on with the purple kids. From the Daredevil series, which wasn't great, and there's just like there's a mystery. Like, she's a detective, she's trying to figure out what's happening. So we're getting bit by bit. She calls in the help of Emma Frost on this one. Really great stuff with Emma Frost, who is written like a British person. So I looked up, is she British? And the answer is no, she's not British. But a lot of people seem to think that she talks like she is.
She's from Boston.
Yeah, which is, it'd be better to read it like.
But it was.
Of course not. Sure. That might bloody kill her, even if he does work out the way you hope.
There's some reason why. This has been. Whatever. You know, she affected a British persona, like,
that's
like
stupid.
Madonna many years ago.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Or like kids who like Monty Python, whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, it's very like noirish. Every time you turn a corner, there's somebody else there to beat you in the head and you don't expect it. And it keeps happening. And you know, everybody's like, don't do this. And she's got to go through it anyway. It's a PI story. And then the Purple Man stuff's always really good. I've been digging this. I saw it was out this week and I went, yeah, I was excited to sort of get to it again. So, you know, people have different sides is my point.
Well, I mean, some characters work better than others with a certain
writing. Yep. And also, you know, sometimes creators will take a different approach to different types of stories, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm. Naomi number two, Brian Bendis, David Walker, Jamal Campbell. What'd you think of this?
I read number one after you told me to, and I read this one. I liked it. I think it's a little... I'm two issues in, and I feel like it hasn't gotten very far. Like, I found it like, the first issue actually kind of bugged me in that it was a little too vague for too long with not much happening, which is, you know, which is a story choice. It's not necessarily bad, but I kind of wanted them to get to something. So at the end of this issue, I think we finally get somewhere, but it feels like it took a really long time to get there.
This feels to me like very classic Bendis.
Yes. Yeah.
This is the very, this feels like Bendis of 20 years ago, you know, very decompressed, a lot of dialogue. It feels very creator owned.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. I'm okay with the slow burn if it's interesting here.
I think there was a little too much of going back and forth with her friends and no real information coming to light. That's mm-hmm. I think that's what I and you know, right now everybody's a mystery, and that's kind of like the parents hiding a secret, is the mechanic hiding a secret, is, you know, I don't know, if it's his daughter, then he picked her up by the head and threw her outside. That's weird.
Yeah, she's got superpowers, so he knows she can take it.
Yeah. Do we know that? I don't feel like I saw that. I was looking for that.
She will have powers, yes, for sure.
Okay. Fair enough.
I mean, it's, to me, it's similar to the beginning of, you know, Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yep.
Where, you know, nothing, you know, didn't really come together until the sixth issue, which was, you know, some people didn't like. I didn't mind it. So I trust Bendis enough
sure.
to know he's got a plan for this. I don't, you know.
Yeah. And David Walker.
The execution. And David Walker's really great, too.
I really dig the art, too. I think I like the, I don't know, it's a very modern feeling, but the fact that like the mechanic guy is just massive and silly. I think sometimes it's really fun to do that with those kinds of characters. You know, like
yeah.
we saw the Rhino in a bunch of comics this week. By the way, both Spider-Man comics shouldn't have the Rhino in them at the same time. Just a note.
Well, there's three Spider-Man comics.
Whatever. Does that also have the Rhino in it?
He didn't have the Rhino was not in that one this week. Okay. For the art, I think I read this week that they are taking a break between arcs because the art takes a long time.
Sure,
but if it looks like this, that's fine.
I think we got greedy with art as consumers, and so that's fine for me.
Well, you know, everyone complains about house styles and DC guys who look the same, and you know, the artists who all look the same sort of style. And mm-hmm. if you want people like this who have a really distinct look and are really talented, sometimes it takes a little longer. And especially yeah. with books that come out every 2 weeks, they can't sustain this level of quality. So I'm okay with a monthly book that takes like a break, a month yeah. off between arcs.
I think the problem is that the economics probably dictate that, you know, the books that come out regularly, even if the art suffers, probably, you know, make more money. They're probably more successful. So I know you got to tread that line, but at a certain point, you got to hold the line.
I'm into it. Yep. I'm into what he's doing with these Wonder Comics books.
I hope that he gets to keep doing them.
Yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy number two. I didn't love the first issue, but I really enjoyed this one.
I thought you might. That was the thought I had. I felt like they got moving. Again, we always talk about the heavy lifting of first issues, and I think those are sometimes the best ones, but sometimes the hardest ones. But if you mm-hmm. get a lot of that work out of the way, then what you get after that is better. I think. Again, like this gets, I don't know if it's just me that gets confusing. Like we have Rhino in a bunch of books, and then in this week we have Peter Quill in a bunch of books. And I was like, wait, which one's doing what? Because we had Old Man Quill come out this week too, and I really want them to stagger those. I'm
actually Quill's floppy hair.
You know what? I don't actually know what he's supposed to look like anymore.
Emo hair.
I kind of don't remember what he looked like before the movies, and I don't expect him to look like.
No, I don't either. I just I don't know Peter Quill well enough to know if this is appropriate Peter Quill hair.
Who knows? I mean, he's sad about his girlfriend, so you know that's a thing. I think what's fun here is that I kind of have to learn who all these characters are again as we go through this, which is kind of like I've heard of Moondragon before, but I don't actually remember anything about her. I know we have is that Cosmic Ghost Rider? Or is that a different? It is. Who's also been another
same Ghost Rider?
Yeah, it's who's also in another book that came out this week. Jesus,
they're just the books are commonly out like shotgun blasts, and it's hard to keep hard to keep track of everything.
And then some shit went down with Star Fox or Eros, who's a different character.
He got
than
blown
Star
up,
Fox.
And now he's paralyzed, and it's like Two-Face.
Yeah, and now then there's a big like the big twist, I guess, at the end is, and there's the spoiler part that we warned you about, is that you know they unpack Nebula from a crate apparently. And then she's like, yeah, I'll help you find, you know, and kill my sister because she hates her and they haven't seen Guardians 2, which is fine. And she's like, oh, that boyfriend she has is totally going to mess this up, but she loves him. And you think that they're going to be talking about Quill, but actually they're talking about Richard Rider Nova. And I was like, fuck yeah, Nova.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. It was like, oh, her ex-boyfriend is going to be the trouble one. I was like, well, yeah, he's Quill. And then turn the page and Richard Rider flying. And that's awesome. One page shot of.
That's Donnie Cates doing a classic superhero comic page turn move.
Yep.
And that perfect. I was like, all right, props. That's the right way to go. That's good stuff.
Jeff Shaw's terrific. We talked about him a bunch. He's done a lot of books with Donnie Cates, and he has a really great offbeat style where people look kind of strange.
Yeah.
And it works. It totally works. And he's really good with like action pages, but also he's, there's a lot of silent stuff in here, which he does really well too. So, I'm digging it. Even if I feel like I'm not quite have a handle on everything, I still really like it. And
there's a thing that can happen, and this is mostly with Marvel books for me, where it's like this, where I sort of half know the characters and you're going along through it and I don't quite know who everybody is. That makes me feel like a kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, that's what I remember from reading Marvel when I was a kid.
So what I can tell here is that Cosmic Ghost Rider quits the team. And then he joins up with Star Fox's evil Guardians team.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Is that what happened?
I think.
He walks out after getting in a fight with everybody and says, I'm out. And then we see the Star Fox reveal with the messed up face and the wheelchair. And then he's there with the other guys. Is that Black Knight with them?
I mean, let me look again.
Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, so he guess he's joined the other side.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Why is his head always been floating in a jar like that?
If he's got the helmet on, I guess. Yeah.
It's weird.
He didn't talk. Did you notice he didn't talk like a Texan anymore?
Which is also strange.
Because it's the same writer.
I know.
He's totally. There's a reason. We don't know it, I think. I feel like this is a work. This is the thing that's happening.
Yeah. American Carnage number 4. I know we gave a spoiler warning, but I don't think I'm going to spoil the ending because I know fewer people are reading this in other books.
Yep.
But this was a comic that genuinely shocked me this week, and that's really great. 4 issues in, this is a really, really. And we talked about every issue. This is a great book. The Leandro Fernandez art is terrific. There's a lot of really spooky, moody pages in here.
Yep.
And the imagery can be tough in this book because it's about racism and racists and
violence and guns.
But like the hitman who wears the racist Obama mask is really unsettling. And that entire scene was terrific.
He's like evil V.
Yeah.
Racist V for victory.
That scene was incredible. That was to me the best sequence of in comics this week. Right? I was on the as soon as our main character walks into this hotel room, and the guy's sitting there in his bed with a shotgun. As soon as that happened, till the end of the book, I was on the edge of my seat. Like I was literally tensed up reading it. It was really good.
Do you think this thing
that happened is real?
Yeah, this is a feint. He's probably got a vest on or something.
I don't know. There's a lot of blood.
Well, it's a sawed-off shotgun, so it's going to have a short-range spray. Leave a lot of pellets around there. It could be. It's a wounding implement.
I mean, it would be a crazy twist. I don't know if you.
It would be.
If you set up the story like this and then take,
There's somebody else.
The main character gets shot with a shotgun in the chest. Gave you a spoiler warning. We can't. We're having trouble talking about it without talking about it. So, It would be really interesting to take the main character off the board for as she's in. But I feel like they did too much work laying all the groundwork on him to do that.
That and there's not another.
There's no one else that takes place.
Right. There's no other protagonist. We've compared this to Scalped before, and I think there were times where we thought that Dash had been killed or something like that. Okay. Again, there wasn't really somebody. There's lots of people to take the villain role in this.
Sure.
You know. Then the other thing is that we kind of the daughter. Who you think? Like it's weird. It's a nice sort of gray area where it's back and forth. Like, is she sweet on this guy? And I don't mean like is she interested in him, but is she accepting him, or is she not? And it turns out that she's seeing all the things. Like, there's something wrong about him. He's not. He doesn't act like a junkie. And the dad's like, we need him.
Yeah, he's too helpful.
He's too nice.
Too eager. Yeah.
You know, there's that. There's a sort of, and then the scene with her and the detective was great. There was, you know, all this sort of quiet tension there.
This is a great crime book.
Yeah, it is. And you notice
and
at the end.
I was genuinely shocked by it.
Yeah. And at the end, Brian dropped the Edward and he was just Brian Hill in this. So.
Right.
So he's cutting things down. And apparently he's totally not quitting comics. He told me that. But I've seen him, you know, like tell a bunch of other people like, no, I was just having a moment. Which is good. I don't want to quit in comics. Brian. Yep. That's why Twitter's no good. If you're in a bad mood, you get away from that thing. This episode of iFanboy is brought to you by Eero. Eero is the next generation, the router we have all needed for the Wi-Fi in our lives. The single router model does not work anymore. It's too much high bandwidth going through your house. We're streaming stuff. I'm recording podcasts in the basement and then the TV going on upstairs.
Who knows what's going on upstairs?
Who even knows? Well, I can tell. My house makes a lot of noises if you move around. So, and usually when things are streaming, it is quieter. It's not, it could be a dance party. I don't know. But the physics work out like this. Wi-Fi waves don't go through walls very well. They will, but you're going to notice a lot of slowdown. So it's like asking a light bulb in your living room to light up your master bedroom. You can't do it. So the solution here is a distributed system. This is what offices have had for a really long time, but it used to cost a lot more and now not so much. So with Eero, you can get enterprise grade Wi-Fi in your home and just a few minutes. You just download the Eero app on your iOS or Android device. It's going to walk you through each step of the process. It's super quick and easy. I have done this. Regular Wi-Fi that you've been using for a long time doesn't optimize and they're hard to manage. And you know that when you go into the admin screen, it's quite a bit of, there's a lot of stuff there and
you need a degree in IT.
You really don't. You know what? I actually know an IT professional friend of mine one day and I was having trouble with my router and he goes, I don't know how to do that stuff. And I was like, see, this is the deal. But that Eero app lets you sort of manage all that stuff in a much more user-friendly way than any other one I've used. This is absolutely true. You can create a guest network so you can share it with others. It's protected with state-of-the-art WPA2 encryption. It controls the hardware and software for the whole network, and it makes sure that you're always secure. One of my favorite things to do is I can open up the app, and I can always see what my bandwidth is across everything. I can see very easily see all the devices that are connected and where and what they're streaming with my kids. I could limit what devices can do what when. I can screw with my wife and I can lock her device off so she can't make it work, which she is not a fan of, but it is fun to do. And if You're all brave, of this man. Still isn't easy enough, I did it once. I'm not doing it again. if you're still having trouble, their customer support is incredible. You will have a Wi-Fi expert if you call up within 30 seconds. If you have problems with their other connected devices during setup, their experts will walk you through everything. They'll also help if you're not sure what sort of Eero setup you should need. Tell them about your house, tell them about your space, and they'll say, you know, this many beacons is good, this isn't. I have the main sort of base unit in my living room, and then I have another one sort of in the opposite corner of the house downstairs, and then I have another one up in the hallway upstairs, and I'm getting much faster speeds than I was with my old router, which was a very nice router, or expensive anyway. I thought it was working fine, then I set up the Eero, and I was like, oh, this is even better. There's also
you can do the hangouts from anywhere.
It's true.
In the house.
It's true. And we used to have a rule that when we were doing podcasting, we had to be plugged in.
Right.
And I don't do that anymore. And we don't have, I don't have dropouts. I don't have bandwidth problems. It's all like it needs to be, which is super helpful for us anyway. There's also Eero Plus. This is their total network protection, advanced security with content and ad blocking. There's the ability to block malicious and unwanted content across your entire network. It's advanced security. It'll check the sites that you visit against a database of millions of known threats. They'll prevent you from accidentally visiting malicious sites without slowing anything else down. There's content blocking that's automatically tagged sites that contain violent, illegal, or adult content. So you can choose what your kids are watching, you know, what they can and can't see. You can do that right through the app. Ad blocking. You've got annoying ads and pop-up ads on devices. It will improve load times for those sort of websites, and you'll stream, you know, and browse faster than you will on the other stuff. There's third-party security apps. There's VPN protections from Encrypt.me. Password management from one password. That's a brand name. And of course, there's antivirus software from Malwarebytes. So that is a big part of it that you can add to the process. And with the offer they've got going right now, for our listeners, it's $100 off the Eero base unit and two beacons package, which is what I have. Plus, you add in a year of Eero Plus to that. That service is included with that. So really, you're saving $200 off. You can get to Eero.com/iFanboy. And when you check out, enter the code iFanboy. And that's how they know that we sent you. And I wholeheartedly recommend it. I really like what this has done in my home.
Love romances. You needed a little love this week, Josh.
I had to check the title that Love Romances was correct.
It's a weird title.
It's a weird title. These are four short stories in the vein of the sort of throwbacky comics that we've been talking about. There was the war one, and then what was the other one? Western one,
yep.
Yeah. And because I'd enjoyed those so much, I actually read this because I might not have otherwise. You've got four short stories written by Gail Simone, Dennis Hallam, formerly Dennis Hopeless, but he's trying to go back to his real name, Margot Motin, and John Adams, not that one. yeah.
Whoa.
My favorite founding father.
Why wasn't this bigger news?
Did you read this?
No, I thought about it, but this was a week where I didn't have a lot of time for extra comic reading.
It was one of those half-half things. Some of them were pretty good. Some of them weren't. The thing that was interesting, there's sort of a wordless cartoon in here, which is by Margot Motin and Paco Dorbling Carter, which is just about sort of a sad dude whose wife or girlfriend has passed away, and you know, you sort of see his ghost or her ghost behind him in the house. It's done in a really sweet sort of cartoony style. It's kind of sad, but it's kind of touching and everything. I really enjoyed that story. Then the Dennis, I want to call him Hopeless, but I'm trying not to, did this weird story about a sort of overprotective father in, looks like, turn of the century New Orleans. And then finally, the last one is this sort of creepy sci-fi story about two, like a couple, and she decides that they love each other so much that they should become robots so they can be with each other forever. They transfer their consciousness into a robot. And he's like, sure, that's great. I've signed us up this weekend. So panel two literally is them standing around looking at their new robot bodies. And his body has like a dumpy face and like a receding hairline. He's like, so this isn't the robot I was supposed to get. And she's like, yeah, we're out of that inventory. And so the girl leaves him within 2 weeks. And then he's alive forever. And then he kills himself by throwing himself into a trash can. Wakes up 200 years
very
later.
Romantic.
Wakes up 200 years later during the robot wars. Falls in love with one of the aliens. I literally had to look. I was like, is this a Mark Russell story? Because if you hadn't told me that it was written by John Adams, not that one, and with art by Tamara Bonvillain, it reads just like a Mark Russell type story. Same beats, same sense of humor. Really fun art. So, you know, the other stories were okay. I didn't love them. But those two I thought were really good.
All right. You've convinced me. I downloaded it.
Okay.
7 to Eternity 13. We haven't talked about this book in years.
I don't think this is going to be what you think it's going to be.
I don't know. I stopped reading this.
Yeah.
Five issues in or so.
Yeah.
As soon as Pena left the first time, I didn't.
He only took one issue off. Didn't he? I don't know. He drew this one. The point is, it's gorgeous, and I will read this just to look at the art. I get Opeña's thing. He's right up there with like a Frank Quitely type of thing, where he's only going to be able to do so much work because of the way that his work looks. Sure. Or who's that? There's a couple of guys like that. Mm-hmm. And you take it. I have no idea what is happening in the story anymore. None. at a certain point in this issue, I just stopped reading it and started looking at it.
Yeah, and that's mostly why I stopped reading.
Yeah.
I was having a lot of the thing about all those books that Remender put out all at once, that, you know, however many years ago that was that I found for the most part they read better collected because mm-hmm. they were really dense storytelling wise.
Yeah, and there was a
Deadly
big...
Class worked okay in issues, yep. and Black Science, although I was often hanging on by my fingernails with Black Science as the characters were, but Seven to Eternity and Low, books like that, I went to trades on because I just couldn't keep up with the story.
Yeah, and I think low in this one specifically, but I'm I kind of know who some of the characters are, mm-hmm. but it's been such a long time and it's so it's dense. Like there's a lot of sort of prosaic type of speaking in this, and you are supposed to, like, you know, who's really good and who's evil or whatever, and like I have no idea. Like it's not even, they're not even fooling me because I don't know.
I don't even blame you for reading it for the art, because Opeña is a special talent.
Oh yeah, yeah. And, no,
we don't get to see him very often. He just posted on Instagram a variant cover he did for Justice League, and it was incredible.
Yeah, no, I didn't feel like it was a waste of my time. If I had, you know, if I'm buying and paying for this comic book, I would be like, I didn't even like it, because it did. I liked looking at it. I'm fine with that. I want him to do whatever it is he wants, and I will read whatever that work is. No problem.
Right. Let's talk about Middle West. Have you read Middle West?
I have been reading Middle West, yes.
Oh, good. Because Ryan, when you were off the show, Ryan Haupt, our fill-in host, mentioned it. I hadn't read the first issue. And I saw, but he was very persuasive, so I went back and read it, enjoyed the first issue, mm-hmm. and been reading it ever since. And kind of like Seven to Eternity, but not quite as much, I'm mostly in this for the Jorge Corona art,
mm-hmm.
and the Jean-Francois Bellieu colors. It's terrific. This book looks gorgeous.
Yeah.
And I like the concept, you know, sort of Middle Earth in the Middle West of the U.S., and it's got this, you know, 1940s-ish vibe, but the story hasn't quite hooked me as much as I really like seeing what they're doing on the pages, which is beautiful.
I think you're right. I think there's, and it's funny because the Bellieu color connects it to Scotty's Young, you know, he's writing it, yeah. he's not drawing it, but it gives you that feeling that, oh, this is a Scotty Young thing, which was the same thing with Bully Wars, which I finished and actually really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. I got the trade came out this week. I'm going to read it to my kids because I think that they'll like that. This is, yeah, the only thing about this one is that, like, there's a mystery going on and it feels like we're visiting a different thing each week.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked where they visited this week. I liked the carnival and they had to steal food and there's the fox.
Yeah, this was almost like a short story.
Yep.
It was... You wouldn't need to read this issue, the other issues, to follow this issue, where the kid's hungry at a carnival and he's got to find food, steals food, and it runs into some people, and there's a cool robot. And
the robot was great. I feel like I actually haven't learned very much at all. And I know the kid's trying to learn, but like he's got some wind powers of some kind, and his dad, I think his dad, in the first one, his dad turned into a tornado.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, something like that. So it's good, but I feel like we need to learn a little more at some point.
I agree. But for now, I mean, my goodness, it's a really good looking. The colors, we know Jean-Francois Bellieu is great. Mm-hmm. He's been coloring Scotty Young for years. But I just love how bright and colorful this book is. I mean, they're at a carnival, obviously, so there's lots of colors. But it's really well colored. And Jorge Corona is a terrific cartoonist.
Yep.
Really terrific cartoonist. Great robots, great animals, great people.
I mean, you would hope that Scotty has the ability to pick out a good cartoonist for himself.
Yeah, sure.
He knows. Yeah, it's really fun. Now, I really liked Mars Attacks 1, and then I missed the second, I think the second and third one at some, because I just wasn't looking for it. So I have 4 and 5 here, but I haven't read them.
Okay.
But you can spoil anything. I assume that we're talking about it. That's a good thing.
Well, yeah, it's really good. Talk about books that I totally expect to get canceled, but I guess haven't been. Mars Attacks 5, Kyle Starks, Chris Schweitzer. And the first three issues were somewhat repetitive. Like they followed the father and the son as they've been escaping from the Martian attack. And it was sort of like, you know, it was almost like The Walking Dead, where they would meet a new group of people. Those people would get killed by the Martians and the father and son would escape and move on at the end of the issue. And then they repeat three times. in the fourth issue, that dynamic changed. I'm not going to spoil it because we talked about it on the show, but you weren't on it, so it's fine. And this fifth issue is all about the aftermath of that. When there's now a captured Martian, and they've got the Martian tech, and it almost becomes a little bit Independence Day-ish, where the son gets recruited to join the military to invade Mars because they don't really have anybody left to join the military. So any able-bodied person really is called in. And I just love the way this is moving in a totally different direction than the beginning of the series is. And the art is terrific. I don't know. I mean, I assume this is not a long-term book. I assume this is like a 6-issue miniseries or 12, but it's a really fun and interesting ride while it's been lasting. And the twist in the last issue really elevated the book into a different place in terms of it subverted my expectations. And so now it's in a different, now the story's different. It's really good.
Yeah.
Really, really good. I mean, these guys are really good cartoonists and storytellers. And we talked about them before with Rock.
Big Rock. Yeah. Not Big Rock, and, just Rock.
This is a really good looking, we're talking about cartooning. I mean, the Chris Schweitzer art here is terrific.
And, oh, he's a great cartoonist. Great.
Yeah. And Kyle Starks, he knows how to hold a beat really well. They use silent panels here really effectively. And the 4 and 5 have really been a tour de force for this book, I think.
Cool. Well, I have those two. I'm just going to read those. I'm going to.
Yeah, you don't really need. I mean, 2 and 3 basically the same.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah. So those are the books we're going to talk about this week over at patreon.com/ifanboy. The people there get to vote and add a book to the rundown. And occasionally what happens is a small band of misfits gets together and they get everyone to vote for a book. And this week it was Savage Dragon 242. Now we have all your names and we have a list of everyone who voted for it, and you will all get what's coming to you.
I mean, we got what's coming to us.
But before we get into this issue, I would like to point out Savage Dragon is a book that when it launched in the 90s, and I was a teenager, I loved the book. I was a big Eric Larson fan. And he's kept at it for 242 months, and that's impressive. I also looked up, and we've been, you know, our old co-host Ron was a big fan of this book, and so we would talk about it occasionally, as into the 200s, actually, as the most recent book I could find that was on the show. So it's not like the book is unknown to us or the show. Now, I did find it interesting to not read a number one, because we normally get a number one issue with these patron picks, so that was an interesting challenge. And for me, I didn't want to go into this cynically, even though I know that I've sort of grown beyond the book at this point. I wanted to sort of see what it was going to be like to return to a book that I had read 20 plus years, 30 years ago, and not really much since then. And it was kind of like being in a country where they kind of speak English, but it's a different English. So you kind of know what everyone's saying, but you don't really know what's going on. Things are sort of familiar, but they're not. But I could not make heads or tails of this issue. And I think that clearly Eric Larson he's writing for the small group of people that are reading this book for 242 issues, because there was like nothing to help you with this issue to figure out what was going on or who the people were or what the relationships were. It was just the 242nd chapter of, which is totally fine. He doesn't have to make it accessible. He doesn't want to. It's his book. But I was completely just like, what? Who? What's happening? What is this? Who are these people? I mean, there was some really interesting panels here, but there was also some really wonky panels. Yeah, it was a slog for me. I imagine you hated this.
I didn't hate it, but I just knew going in. Like, I've tried to read it before, and I don't get it. I didn't ever read it. I've read random things here and there. I knew it wasn't, you know, I know it's never been for me. And I read this and like, I did go in with an open mind. And I thought, what I actually thought was, well, the fact that people picked this issue, there must be some reason. There must be something about this.
The reason was they thought the cover was wacky. That was the inciting incident.
Well, fair enough. So I thought maybe there would be some sort of, you know, moment or watershed in this that would sort of give me enough to grab onto, but I had no idea who anyone was, what, you know, anything was. I was 100% lost. There are some anagrams to Marvel characters. There's like a Daredevil / Ant Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a Thor, pretty much looks like Thor, but with less clothes.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of enjoyed the art. You know, I like how loose and brushy the Eric Larson stuff was.
Yeah.
There was something to that that I think, and over time, like his style has really sort of congealed into, you know, when you do this like this for so long, you develop, an artist will develop a lot of their own shorthands, and sometimes mm-hmm. that becomes like their own style even more than it was originally. And I actually like this better than I used to, like the way he used to draw.
Yeah, there's a couple of panels I thought were really good in here.
Yeah.
He has that big dynamic Kirby-esque,
yeah,
you know, action. He's of the old school, which he thinks comics should be done this way, and he's very good at it.
Yeah. Then to me, it's like, I'm not actually sure. Is this guy with the fin? Is this always Savage Dragon?
No, I think that's his son.
Okay, that's what I thought. Because I was like, he doesn't look quite like Savage Dragon. But then there's a younger one?
I guess he's had a lot of kids over the years. That's one of the jokes, is that the father... There's one part where one of the mothers is explaining to the kids that your father has had a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think these are all his kids.
All right.
But I don't know.
So was Savage Dragon even... Was he even in this?
No.
Okay.
I wonder if he's dead. I don't know.
Yeah, I was completely lost. So again, I kind of just read this to look at the art. And I read it. Like, I put in the effort. But there was definitely a certain point where I was like, this isn't going to get any... There's nothing here.
So it's not getting any easier for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just unclear, really. So, okay, you asked for it. You got it. That's our review of Savage Dragon 242.
I hope you're happy.
Yep.
Ratings.
Ratings. Even this is hard. Like, that review was not like this was bad. That would be like if you took me to a Hi-Li game. I'm like, what'd you think of that game?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it felt like. That looked like it took some athletic prowess.
Right.
You know, I don't know if that guy was playing, was he an off-the-ball Hi-Li player? I don't know.
Things are happening very quickly.
Yeah, that's true. It moved quickly, I'll give it that. So, but at the end of the day, I had to say, so where's the main character? Was he in this? No, he wasn't in this. Oh, okay.
Not a good sign.
Well, not, yeah.
But I can't fault it because, like I said, it's clearly for people who've been reading it this whole time.
And also, like, trying to make it as a jump on point is a fool's errand, and he knows that, so.
Yeah.
So obviously you want to just give him congratulations. Hey, you're still doing the thing you want to do. Good for you.
That's my rating. Handshake.
Here, you know what?
Handshake out of five.
Instead of a rating, I'm gonna share a story. At New York Comic Con,
almost always get you in trouble. But let's continue.
It's okay. At New York Comic Con, a number of years ago, we went to have Shake Shack with Chris Eliopoulos. Chris Eliopoulos famously contributed strips to the first part of the run. For Savage Drag, where he put his Desperate Times strips in the back of it. So he's very close with Eric Larson. So at the last minute, they're like, Eric Larson is going to tag along with us to Shake Shack. And we were like, cool, where should we go? Well, we can't go downtown because there's protests happening from the, what was it? Protest? You weren't there?
I was there. I don't even remember the protest.
It's the one where they were
The Republican convention?
No. It was the Occupy.
Oh, Occupy Wall Street was happening.
Yeah, right. That was happening. They were protesting up there. So we got to the Shake Shack just off of Times Square, which was new at the time, and there was a big line to get inside. So we all hung out and we talked, and it was fun. Eric Larson loves hamburgers, apparently. Like, it's a big thing for him. And then two people got in a fight, and somebody pulled a knife out.
That's right. I blocked this out, but yeah.
Uh-huh. And it didn't end with a stabbing.
That was the night we almost witnessed a murder with Eric Larson.
Yep. So then, you know, it was a lot of yelling, and then somebody basically decided to run away instead of stabbing someone.
We didn't get out of line, though, because it was a long line.
We'd been there for a while. And to be honest, we wanted to have dinner with Eric Larson. So, you know, we were willing to risk being part of a brouhaha and or melee. So I'm going to give it that knife fight story out of five.
All right, sticking with it.
Nope.
No, neither. All right, so let's talk about patron powers over at patreon.com/iFanboy. If you give it the $5 or higher level, you can get your own superpower on the show.
And I feel like what we didn't just do was discourage people from choosing books like this again. They think, well, we might get interesting stories at the end of it, if not a good review.
People should vote for whichever book they want us to
read. True. No, it's absolutely true.
If they want to do that, that's fine. Mm-hmm. This is what you get, though. You get that. Tyler Brilli is the first patron we're going to thank. Tyler can see everyone's pain points. So,
oh, wow.
Like, when he activates his power, everybody becomes a black outline, and he can see sort of a heat map of where they're in pain.
Mm-hmm. Like Midnighter.
Yes. But didn't Midnighter see, like, their weaknesses?
Karnak saw weaknesses. Midnighter would know all of the moves they would be able to make or were going to make before they would make them. So his thing was, I've won the fight before it started.
Right. No, what Tyler does is, like, he can see that guy's got a bad knee.
Oh.
You know, maybe attack the knee, you know.
So the pain points are not species specific, but individual specific.
Individually, like, oh, that person currently is in a lot of pain in his elbow.
Right. I can't imagine how you thought of this.
Sometimes it's the heart that's in pain.
Hey, now.
So.
So he just, he's mean to them?
Just, you know, maybe someone just had a heartbreak. Mm-hmm. Or they had a lot of steak and there's a clot artery problem. Either way, Tyler sees the pain points.
Paul Houlihan can cure colorblindness.
He can cure colorblindness.
Yeah, he lays hands on the colorblind, and once they were colorblind, now they can color see. So,
cool.
The effect of that is that people will go from having a, by necessity, bland wardrobe to really being able to mix it up.
You understand that colorblindness is not black and white. I have
that's true.
It's mostly just most people with colorblindness have problems differentiating shades of color at times.
Yes.
That's what I have. Other people, I met one once, truly don't see color.
Yeah.
But that's rare.
My understanding is that there are certain colors that are unable to be differentiated between. So
certain,
like,
colors are more difficult. Green and green and red and brown is a problem.
So, like, I have a friend who... Why have we never talked about this with you? That's weird. I have a friend, though, like, he can't dress himself, basically. So he buys everything in beige and blue so that he knows everything will match.
That's what I talked about with the guy I met. And he says, actually, Ron and I met him at a dinner party, and Ron was the one having the conversation. I was having a different conversation, but I was also listening. I did meet him later. He goes into a store and gets a salesperson and says, just give me that outfit.
I remember that.
On the mannequin, and then he puts it in a bag and keeps all the outfits together, and he keeps them all together. So that's how he knows what
goes together. Paul comes along, no problem anymore.
All right.
Doesn't necessarily give you good taste. It's not going to cure that, but at least you'll know what you're working with.
Michael Sturgeon has attack eyebrows.
Go on.
They fly off of his face. And they attack people.
Do they make this sound?
they smack you in the face. They can poke you and. Exactly.
That was them getting back on his face.
Right. Exactly. That's what happens.
I like that. That was a lot of fun for me. Michael J. Dargenio is immune to plot twists. He knows everything that's going to happen in the story. He's much like the Midnighter of
stories.
Yeah. So
does he just not engage with stories?
Books, he just has to come at it from a different level, and he hates M. Night Shyamalan. Hates it. So really, you want to have your characters developed in his case.
So it's only plot twists. It's not just regular twists of a story.
Just plot. He knows where the beats are going to be, but the plot twists are really glaring.
I see.
Because most of us, you know, you know that when those of us who think about these sort of things a lot, you know, well, if this character says this, then this is the thing that pretty much has to happen. That's the choice, you know. So you can kind of go that way. But the really unexpected twist, he also sees that coming with certainty, with clarity from moment one.
I'd like to point out that last week when you gave Austin Riley his bonus power.
Mm-hmm.
Because the previous week you'd given him a duplicate and you said you would give him a new one.
Uh-huh.
That bonus power was also duplicate.
All right, here we go. Austin Riley has grasshopper legs.
Grasshopper legs for Austin Riley. Okay.
He's getting his money's worth, is what I'm saying.
He's got three powers. I told you, I love this as a daisy chain where he ends up with 400 powers.
He's not. I won't take any away from him. Austin is up to. He's got grasshopper. He's going to be a grotesque figure at the end of this.
With legs. He can keep fish alive, and he knows the cost of everything.
I've done fish alive before too.
Yeah, not that far off either. It was in the 600s.
Huh. Well, since I started recording up here in the living room in the winter, I'm looking right at the fish the whole time.
Well, the thing is, you should stop because you're just wasting powers you're going to need later.
No, I'm reusing them anyway.
Okay.
I wrote three today, and I happen to have grasshopper legs there. I decided I didn't want to use it, and then I found a use for it. So, you know, all good. This is going to get worse.
Fanboy, that's where you go. You can get your dumb power at the $5 higher level. You can vote on the patron pick at any level. You can enjoy the patron hangout at any level, which we did last weekend, which was fun. So all those things happening at patreon.com/ifanboy. Plus, you can help us get to our next stretch goal, which is the monthly non-comics media podcast, as well as uploading all of the missing full-length and mini video shows to YouTube, which were taken down by our old distributor. We can put them back up on our YouTube channel if we hit the next stretch goal, which is not that far off. So check it out, patreon.com/ifanboy. Also, the t-shirt store, ifanboy.threadless.com. 7 designs, the ifanboy logo shirt, the Herm shirt, the Pick of the Week podcast ratings. If one is Electro, GDAT, nothing makes sense, nothing matters. And Josh, I ordered finally a couple of those shirts for myself. I hadn't ordered any in a while.
Wow.
So I'm going to have my very own Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters shirt to wear around town.
Ooh.
To display to everyone.
And somebody would be like, that's grim. And you'd be like, it's a top seller.
It is. Ifanboy.com/support. Direct donation via PayPal happens there. We just got another one this week, and it was a very oddly specific number. We thank everyone whoever did that. That was very funny for us. And ifanboy.com/Amazon is where you can go check out the books from the Booksplode show, as well as a general link on for Amazon shopping. We thank everyone who does any of the previous things to help support the show and keep the lights on. We do appreciate that very much.
What do you do?
We can do one.
Let's do the first one, which was a holdover from last week.
All right. Davin P. You read it. I'll read it. You read it.
Davin P. says, while reading West Coast Avengers, I was reminded of the older method of cross-referencing other current issues or storylines. At the beginning of issue 3, the Avengers were clearing a bunch of snow, and it was attributed to something that happened in the current issue of Thor. Using Marvel Unlimited, I figured out that was Thor 348 and 349, which I was proceeded to read. Funny enough, those issues referenced two other issues, and if those were current, I probably would have gone down that rabbit hole and be buying all of these issues. You kind of mentioned on in the episode that the universe used to feel connected and now people are just trying to make important runs. But I think this is what got us addicted to comics in the first place. Is it because there's no bullpen? Is it some kind of forgotten art form? And do you think we'll ever see it again?
We'll get into that in 1 second. A couple points of clarity. I don't think we said people trying to make important runs. I just think the people's runs are siloed off now.
Yes.
And they're writing for trade stories.
Yeah.
Two, the bullpen was a myth.
That's not fully true.
In terms of the writers and the art, right. Like in the very beginning, they were all around because Stan and Jack were doing everything, but that quickly went away. And the production teams were in the bullpen, but the writers weren't writing in the offices, and that wasn't. It's a different style. I did notice in Savage Dragon this week that there was a lot of those kind of editor's notes for itself, which was fun. I did like that.
Yeah.
And he's right. I mean, comics were basically kind of a weird Ponzi scheme where you you would read one and then it would say, go check out this other issue. Check that out. And then that issue would reference two others and three and four. And all of a sudden there was, you know, it's like Amway.
The fact is, that's what hooked me.
Yeah.
And that was how I discovered other things at that time. Now, we're talking about, here's why that doesn't happen anymore, I think, is that one, you know, they are siloed out, and that's almost, it's almost like they've decided that they can't actually get the continuity all right, so they sort of gave it up.
And they're also writing for evergreen trades more than that too. Anything else.
So that's the other side of it.
And also when your books are coming out, some books are every 2 weeks, some books are every week. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not a standardized shipping schedule, so it's hard to kind of keep that in line when you don't, when the books aren't really coming out at the same frequency.
And then I think there's another factor to it, which is economic. By the time that we got used to this, comics were 75 cents.
Yeah.
And so you think about that. Like now, I don't think that if you were to look at the inflation rate, it quite equals that. But because circulation has gone down so much, cost of printing will have gone up per issue, and then the cost of the talent.
So I remember in 1990, okay. I think was when comics changed over to $1. I think it was when I was in junior high school, and I was that year. We'll just say it
quickly went to $1.25 after that, but yeah.
1990, or was $1 with $1.25? That might have been it. Okay. Anyway,
In 88, it was 75 cents.
$1.1990 is $1.94 now.
So okay, so there you go.
Rapidly outfleshed.
But there are different things happening there, though. One, circulation circulation has dropped precipitously. I mean, they could sell a million issues or something back then. It wasn't everything, but that's unheard of today. 300,000 is sort of the limit that anybody gets to today, and that's with a lot of variant covers and things like that.
Yeah.
Printing costs are way up from what they used to be, and the economies of scale in the amount of stuff that they're printing. If you think they were doing 100,000, 200,000 issues that they were printing, now they're doing 20,000, 30,000. That makes your cost a lot higher per issue. So all those things mean that I don't think that people.
But also, you're paying professional, colorists now, in which there was just a bullpen.
Yep, staff guys. Same with letters.
Job. It's more the biggest cost in a comic is still the talent, and it's more expensive now than it was then. The point is that it was easier to go down that rabbit hole when it was
$0.50
a comic than it was at $4 a comic.
Right, and so that became the thing, and that worked on Connor and I like a treat. I mean, it was what is going on over here. I want to check that out. And also just to let you know that there was another thing. So if you liked this bit, what was happening in this book, you would probably like what was happening in the other book if you got to see it from a different angle. And it was great. I mean, when we were reading that Avengers book, and also I was reading Simonson's Thor, and you just see somebody going by in the background. Where's that guy going? Check here. And I was like, that's awesome. I loved that.
There were also fewer comics coming out then, too.
That's a good point also. Yeah. I did
notice this week in that – I'm just going to go ahead and say terrible issue of Miles Morales Spider-Man this week that Captain America did run off to help with something, and it was said, follow Captain America to Avengers number 14. So they did do that. I mean, it's a super rarity, and that's why it stands out now when you see it.
And I also think there's an element of, it feels antiquated. When they do it now, it's like when Bendis was like, I'm going to do thought bubbles again. Like it's a gimmick, but before it was part and parcel of the project, and it's not that anymore. I don't think we can return to it. I really liked that it was a thing.
I think it's the market's still. I think you could probably return to it if the conditions were the same, but they just aren't.
Yeah. And then also I'm sure the editors have always been overworked, but I bet this is one more bit of something that would make their jobs tougher. Seriously, if there was another step to putting these books out, which are always, they're running right on margin, and they're like, the timing is we need to get this stuff done overnight so we can get it out. They're on the schedule. You think about it, Marvel and DC, same amount of editors, they're putting out two books a month for each title now.
Yeah.
That's a lot of work. So at the same time, then you have to go and cross-reference everything that's happening in there, and you can't control the shipping schedule on that other thing, and you don't remember, it's just not that world now.
Right.
But it was a great part of what that world was. Absolutely. I love it. I it's so good.
For sure.
Uh-huh.
All right. So that's email contact@fanboy.com if you want to get into the show. Thanks to everyone who wrote in this week. We'll try to do better getting more emails on, but there's just a lot to talk about. Let's do some plugs. So we have the Reign of Superman show back there in the feed. It was our last special edition show. Our next one will be Captain Marvel, which will be in about a week. Is that the correct number? 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Three weeks?
2 weeks. 2 weeks. Comes out in 2 weeks. I have my ticket. So we'll be talking about that. And then soon we'll have the April Special Edition Apocalypse coming, which there's one every week, I think. But there's a lot of special edition shows coming to you soon.
I will mention this for the last time, but we did talk about American Carnage again. And for December, I released an interview with Brian Edward Hill, Talksplode, at the very end of January. If you haven't checked that out, please do. This month, you will find just before this show, the February Talksplode on time with artist and write, not art. Well, he is an artist. That's what we found out. Letterer, artist, writer, an all around really good guy, Joe Caramagna of New Jersey, United States. Him and I talked for a while. I really dug the, you know, he went to the Kubert School, you know, to be a cartoonist. And we talked about his time at the Kubert School and, you know, being taught by Joe Kubert, then his time in the Marvel bullpen, right. And then sort of how he got to where he is now. And, just, you know, sometimes you meet people or, you know, people just have like this great attitude and they're just really happy to be doing what they're doing. And Joe's a great example of that. So, you should go listen to that. You would be thinking wrongly, like, I don't want to listen to a show with a letter. That is all the wrong way to approach comics. It just is.
So we are getting ready for the next Booksplode. That'll be next month. We keep changing what it's going to be.
We're kicking books. Some footballs.
We have four books we want to talk about. We just try to figure out what order we're going to do them. So as soon as we know, we'll let you know. We have to decide soon anyway. So it'll be soon. But we... Literally every couple of days, I keep proposing different book or Josh does, and we go, okay, shit. And so then we have to move everything around. So including a listener sent in a good idea that we're going to put into the list. So it's coming. My point is it's coming. In the meantime, head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all the previous podcasts we just talked about, as well as the weekly Pick of the Week show you just listened to. And also find out where the Pick of the Week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following us on Twitter @ifanboy. Individually, we are @JAFlanagan on Twitter and Instagram. And at CS Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like this show, you should leave a review over at the iTunes or a star rating or something. Just do something. For God's sakes, do something. No. Do something like that for another show you like. It doesn't necessarily even have to be ours if you've done it before. That helps the shows out. It helps us make fun of that other podcast who are our friends. It's stupid. I'm not even going to bother right now. You should definitely do that. But even better than that, go to social media. Tell your friends about it. Tell folks who are following you about it who might be interested in the show. We always really appreciate that and the folks who do it. It's always a bright spot in my day when I see that somebody sort of said, I like this show a lot. Please check it out. Makes me feel really good, especially after all this time. So there. Thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you.
So that'll do.
Yeah.
That's your show.
That's your show. Until next week, I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Thanks so much.